Aloha from the Garden Island, and welcome to Kauai Community Radio's Talk Story Series, dedicated to Hawaiian musicians as they share their stories and songs. Valapao, or talk story, is translated as reminiscing or communicating. In this edition, Kaʻamea, or the Winds of Change, we focus on those innovative musicians who have taken traditional Hawaiian music and instruments to a new level. Growing up in a musical family, Ken Emerson became absorbed in Hawaiian music and culture. A master of multiple instruments, Ken was a Grammy winner in 2006. In this special edition of Talk Story, Ken Emerson is joined by KKCR's Noel Brooks.
Good afternoon.
Hello.
My good friend over here, how young were you when you got interested in music, and what were things laying around the house that got you interested in music?
We had music going constantly in my house because my father was a real avid record collector, and he liked all types of music. So he collected music from all over the world, and also he loved jazz and he loved classical music. So I grew up with just about every genre you can imagine from the time I was just, you know, a little kid. So we always had music going in the house. We also had instruments in the house that were inherited through our family line from my great-grandfather to my grandfather to my dad. The instruments I remember having around the house were an ukulele that my mom played. She was a kid. And we had a zither that my great-grandfather played. He also played the concertina. My grandfather played mandolin. So we had all these instruments in the house. The ukulele was good when you're small because your hands are small, so I learned on that first.
Was your brother involved at all in music in the early days too?
Yeah, in fact, I have an older brother and sister, and they were the first ones to start playing guitar. So I went from the uke to the guitar pretty early, I'd say about 9 years old.
Did you and your brothers play together and do things?
Oh, yeah, we played in the house quite often and sang. And, you know, it was before the Beatles, it was during the folk era. So they were doing a lot of the Sippy Wallace, and we all sang, played, and I'm sort of grateful for that because, of course, when the Beatles hit, everybody wanted to get an electric guitar. So I had that acoustic bass to start from and fingerstyle guitar. You know, they were playing songs like Freight Train and stuff and had the alternating thumb and playing the melody, which really came in handy once I started playing slack key later on.
Wasn't that called like three-finger picking? Isn't that what that was at one time?
Oh, they call it Travis picking. There's a bunch of names for it. But it's syncopated and you're holding the bass and playing the melody. That's one of the great things about slack keys, really based on that.
Steel guitar, now, when did that show up in your life?
Yeah, that's sort of interesting how it showed up. First of all, about 40 years ago, just before we moved out here, a neighbor had a Bakelite Rickenbacker steel guitar. Nobody knew what to do with it. It had the strings that were really high, and you had to play it with a bar. And it got around to me, and I just started playing it. It was really odd. It was already there. And also at that time, I had played the guitar with a harmonica because I was like into blues music.
Well, that was before cell phones, because you play with cell phones, yeah. You know, drinking glasses.
Nowadays, whatever. It's the cell phone. But, you know, I can give an example if this will work here.
He's got his harmonica.
So I'd play the... You know, sort of utilizing two things at the same time, sort of a trick. So I would say, yeah, the blues music was a real influence on the slide playing. But my dad had some really interesting records. He loved Genoa Keawe, and he was a pilot. He'd bring stuff back through Hawaii, coming back from the Orient. And he had quite a collection of 78s. I loved Genoa. I loved the steel guitar. When we moved to Oahu, it's at the end of 67, right around that time, early 68. I remember a real defining moment. We were down in Waikiki, and it was a beautiful moonlit night, one of those real balmy evenings. And we were walking by the Moana Hotel in the Banyan area there. And there was a trio playing and the colored lights, and there was, I think, a couple dancers. The steel guitar is just really captivating. And to see it visually played like that was like, I thought, man, that's got to be the best job in the world.
Did you have any idea who it was?
Yeah, I found out later it was Billy Hugh Lynn. And, you know, he became a great friend and a real mentor, really. So later on, I was very lucky to be able to hang around all these classic musicians that were still around at the time. Some were like, you know, two, three generations older than me.
What I think is interesting is that you're often compared to the modern day Sal Ho'opi'i, which is a great compliment.
Well, thanks. I love that type of music. You know, to be able to incorporate jazz and blues in the Hawaiian is really a fun thing to do. And of course, I started with my brother Phil. Another defining moment was when we were at the Cam Flea Market. This is back in probably around 74 or 5. And we found these Sal Ho'opi'i records. And, you know, the minute we started listening to them, we were like all charged up. Hey, we could do this, you know, no one's doing it. Right around that time period, my brother had a steel guitar, another Rickenbacker, that he had put an ad in the paper to sell. And this gentleman called up and said, can I come and look at it? Sort of had an accent, you know, like he was from the South or something. And so he shows up and it's Jerry Bird. And he was just a great character. And boy, we sat and talked for hours. That was around 1975 at my parents' house up in Hawaii Kai. That started a relationship that lasted years. And we were completely on the opposite ends of the spectrum when it comes to steel guitar. Real tasty and modern, and, you know, I played electric, and I was fully into the acoustic sound.
Thank you.
Well, you were around some of the wonderful Hawaiian steel. You got to see these people really do this.
Yeah, got invited to play with them too. We used to go to the Waimanalo Quarry. That was great. We showed up in this rusty old Valiant, completely accepted. You know, I got on stage with Gabby and Blah and whoever else is up there. And those are amazing times. I think the music was the language, you know.
When did you first record?
You know, it's funny. I found a bunch of cassette tapes. Because back in the early days, it was expensive to record. You know, studios cost a lot of money. So we do a lot of stuff at home on reel-to-reel or cassette, you know. This is back in the late 60s, early 70s. Well, actually, the first recording I ever did was back east. That was a recording session I did in Washington, D.C. I was visiting my folks that were living there at the time and got hired to play steel guitar and guitar on this country artist record. That was in 1972. And it came out on a 45, and I'd sure like to find that record. I was 19 years old at the time. But that was my first real session. I remember I was hooked at that point. But it wasn't quite a few years later till I actually got into a real studio. I did some recording in the San Francisco and Santa Cruz area. But there was an interesting character I met in Santa Cruz. His name was Tom Scribner. He was about 80 years old, and he played the musical saw. And he knew all these old songs from the teens and the 20s, and he knew Hawaiian music. And my brother and I and Tom would go out on Pacific Mall Avenue there in Santa Cruz and play out on the street. You could do that back then. There was a lot of busking and street musicians going on. And we'd play, you know, on the beach at Waikiki, and we'd play in harmony, and he'd play the saw, and I'd play the steel as a duet. It was a great sound. And he was a very noted musician, a real character. I ended up moving back, and the timing was good because this homegrown album was being produced, and we had a song that we had written in Hawaiian called Kaihanupanupa, which means the surging sea. And so we thought, what the heck, we'll just send them a tape. So we did that and got accepted on this record. It was sort of a Sol Ho'opi'i type of style, yeah, old style. And I mean, at that time, no one was doing that at all in the islands. We really came out of left field. And I think that's why the old timers really enjoyed us, because we were doing that throwback to the 20s, you know. You know, we were living in Honolulu, and I was checking out all the great music that was going on at the time. And then Mo Keale was going to do a solo album. He was sort of in between bands. So he asked us if we wanted to back him up. And of course, you know, he's one of my favorites. That was a real honor. So we did that South Sea Island Magic album. My brother and I had a showroom for a while next to the Casamero's at the Ala Moana Hotel. That was really fun. But I wanted to kind of get out, especially go to the outer islands. And when we hooked up with Mo Keale, then we really started playing everywhere. And that was a great thrill, because Mo had a lot of knowledge, and he had good stories about being at Kilauea when the volcano really erupted back in 59. It was 2,000-foot fountains of lava. And he said him and his friends were, you know, right there checking it out. And also, we got to go to some real strongholds. We used to play at the Waimea Broiler on the Big Island. And there was a place called the Redwater Inn. It was a real cowboy scene, I'll tell you. Hawaiian style. It was great. And Hui Ohana were playing there. So when we got through, we went down there and sat in with Ledward. And then that was a real thrill for us, you know.
Thank you.
was so much good music going on in the 70s, of course. That's what they call the Hawaiian Renaissance. And it truly was. I mean, in the late 60s, I lived in Ewa Beach on the island of Oahu. And all of my contemporaries all at our age, even the Hawaiians, a lot of us were playing rock and roll and that type of music. Boy, as soon as the decade changed into the 70s, there was just this huge interest in slack key and Hawaiian music. I spent a lot of time on the west side of Oahu, and we always heard about Leonard Kwan. He was the one that was mostly spoken of, and he had put records out, and he played the slack key. I was playing a lot of blues at that time, and straight G tuning, which they called tarot patch, so I already had it going.
Who else was around in that same period?
Raymond Kane, Gabby later on. Of course, he was around, but I think when he did those records with Panini, really, man, it just exploded, really. But those other records for the Sons of Hawaii were just great, you know.
So was Gabby also instrumental in giving you insights into both Steele as well as his approach to slack key? Because he was a great musician.
Yeah, you know, Gabby was quite a good Steele player. And we had a lot of common ground on that point, you know. And he just loved the old guitars and the things that we were doing. There was a radio show called Aloha Po'alima that was on KCCN, All Hawaiian Music Station. And man, they were so supportive. And we would go up there on Friday and do this live radio show. And we would get Gabby up there and Ralph Alapai and all the old timers and Andy Cummings, just lots of artists. And go there and play live on the air, talk story. So we got to know Gabby pretty well. Ultimately, got invited to play gigs. The Waimalu Quarry was a favorite place for me to play. It was all Hawaiian. And we had a gig at this place called The Noodle Shop. It was in Waikiki Sand Villa Hotel near the Alawai. And that was just a great gig. And I would, on my breaks, I had just enough time to run down and see the Suns playing at another venue, catch about 10 or 15 minutes of Feet Rogers playing steel, and run back and play our gig. That was
great. It seems to me that I remember people talking about that particular era, that people used to leave their show, run somewhere else, catch somebody else's show. It was like acts were crossing each other in the street, and everybody was checking everybody else out and having a good time.
The Casimeros had this showroom, and whenever they went out, Outer Island, I remember Olomana used to sit in for them, Robert Beaumont and Jerry Santos. And that was fun because I'd go over there on my break and play Hawaiian Cowboy with them. I remember always they wanted me to bring the steel over and play Hawaiian Cowboy with them. Saul Bright lived on Ennis Street. I used to go over to his apartment and hang out with him and talk about the old days. And ultimately, we got invited to do some gigs with him, and that was a real thrill. I mean, I had his 78 records of him playing with Saul Ho'opi'i, as well as his own great records. Learn how to play that style of steel guitar from Saul Ho'opi'i. You know, imagine a thrill for a young guy to be talking about the old days. He was a happy Hawaiian. He was of the old guard, I'll tell you. He was so genial, so friendly, full of aloha, and a real character. He had a white 57 Cadillac convertible he used to ride around in. And whenever we went to gigs, you know, he'd have the big double bass sticking out the back seat, and my brother and I in there with him, we're all dressed in white with our hats. It was just so much fun. Because he was really a living link to that whole era of the 20s, which is one of my favorite eras. So it's very fortunate to be able to know him and play music with him. We made it a point to look up as many of the classic Hawaiian musicians that we could find. So we ended up playing with George Kainapau, and oh man, and the list is long. I was very lucky. Alice Fredlin and her trio, the Halekalani Girls, Kela, Kalama, Genoa. I remember the first time I got to sit in with Genoa, we played a couple of hulas, and she kind of spoke softly off the side, and she goes, "Thank you, Ken. Very nice. You did your homework." I thought that was a high compliment coming from her. With Mo Keale, we were able to get out and play the Outer Islands. I had come to Kauai back after I graduated from high school, sometime in the early 70s. The attraction was always there, the feeling of this place, the specialness of it. I first moved to Maui, though, off of Oahu. I lived in Lahaina. And I kept coming over here, and eventually I just said, that's it. So I moved over here around 1980. Thank you.
Well, it's fortunate that you were actually able to earn a living, because really a sad commentary that so many of the Hawaiian musicians have to have day jobs.
Yeah, it was hard. You know, a lot of musicians ended up in California. I know Randy Lorenzo did. And I would play over there, and I would travel. And right around the early 80s, I started going international, you know, playing in New Zealand, Australia, Japan. Eventually made it to Europe. And when I first started playing in France, I met some Tahitians that were living there. And they had a dance troupe, and the musicians were great. They invited me to play and tour with them, so I've been doing that for a while now. I played in Nagoya one time, and these two fellows showed up with these old vinyl records of me and my brother. One of them I didn't even have, you know. I go, where'd you get these things? Like, oh, we collect them, you know. A lot of people don't realize that Hawaiian music at one point was just huge. Back through the teens all the way through the early 50s, I think rock and roll pretty much took over, but Hawaiian music was tremendously popular. The ukulele is such a portable instrument. I mean, it made its way around the world. And the steel guitar. I mean, the steel guitar is such a specialized sound, you know. It's a very unique way of playing a guitar. We can thank Joseph Keikuku for really developing it. Slack key started around the 1830s or something. Steel guitar came along at least a couple decades later. It was almost discovered by accident, you could say. But of course now, you know, it's in all types of music.
I don't know everybody that plays piano that can tell you the history of a piano, but you're interested in the history. So it's an interesting thing that you're a grasp of, in addition to playing the instrument, that you know about the instrument. And that's a very different thing entirely.
Well, it's really kind of a voyage of discovery, you know. And when you're younger, you really are eager to learn and know more. Being able to look up some of these classic musicians, and you start to connect all the dots, you know. Saul Ho'opi'i passed away the year I was born, 1953. I did get to know his widow, though, and we corresponded. So I was able to get a lot of information about him through her. And, of course, Saul Bright was with us for a long time. How lucky were we, you know? Great stories that guy had. It was just amazing, especially when he wrote The Hawaiian Cowboy. He was up in some venue up in Northern California, I think near Petaluma, at the height of the Depression, you know. It was like late 20s, around 1930. This woman kept throwing him these humongous tips. Keep playing that, you know, so he just made it up on the spot. That's how that song was born.
Fortunately, he remembered it so he could write it down.
Yeah, he just kept ad-libbing and making up verses, and there you go, there was a song. Nothing like getting paid to write a song, huh? You got to have a lot of faith to be a musician, even nowadays, you know? And it really is why I travel. I enjoy traveling. But if you get out there, you'll find places where you do quite well, and they want you to come back.
You had fun in Seattle for the Evergreen this year, yeah?
I did. I love that area. It's beautiful. And also of Canada, a real contingent of steel guitar fanatics up there. And some Hawaiians, Ben Hokea, a lot of classic Hawaiians ended up living in places like that and teaching and having music schools.
We'll return to Talk Story after your station's identification.
So you've developed your own style, which it just sort of evolved over time, yeah?
I've taken influences like Latin music, which is in Hawaiian music anyway. I mean, the guitar was brought by the vaqueros. So I like putting those types of feeling into some of my compositions. And that artist that we heard, I told you, hey, that's only one guitar, that steel guitar he's playing. David Kanui, you rarely ever hear anything like that. And I was developing that from being a slack key player. I thought, how can I incorporate the steel into it and make slack steel? Which is exactly what it is. It's using that syncopated rhythm, the thumb, and playing the melody, only instead of fingering, you're using the steel. And it's tricky because you have to let the bass notes ring out. And most steel guitar players would have the bar laying flat on all the strings. With slack steel, you have to pull the bar up, the heel end up, and just play with the top of the bar. It's real tricky.
You're the only one I've ever seen use a cell phone on a steel guitar, or not a steel guitar, on a regular guitar, and just pick up a cell phone and start playing steel in your lap without buzzing the strings, which is kind of unique.
You know,
where'd you get that one?
It's just having fun and little trick things. But actually, one time I was doing that at the Princeville Hotel, and somebody called me while I was playing with the phone.
Not guilty. You know
who that might have been?
Yeah, I have a pretty good idea who that was.
The steel guitar is such an expressive instrument. You know, just to be able to take a chord and you slant the bar down, it changes the pitch of all the strings, and you can just get this chord that sort of works, but it would be hard to write it out musically because things are sort of in between the notes. It's an incredible way you can slide around on it and make these interesting voices.
Some years ago, actually it was quite a while back, that you played with Taj Mahal when he did something at the War Memorial.
Taj has been in and out of Kauai for a long time. He loves this place, and he's a big influence. I actually met him in California back around 1976, I believe it was. He's another musicologist, really. He has a lot of stories to tell, and he draws from early influences. I really admire that. I like that. I like to try and do that with Hawaiian music, sort of honoring the past, the uniqueness and the different styles and the way things are sort of hybrid, you know, all the influences.
Is there any chance that you'll record again with Brother Phil? You guys do something?
Yeah, he helped me out with this new record I did called Slack and Steel Kauai Style. And we're planning on doing a recording this year. In fact, we're going to meet up in Ireland. He's going to be doing a festival out there. So we'll probably record in London somewhere. I like spending time in London. And one of my favorite studios there is Olympic Studios in Barnes. It's a pretty famous place. It's where the Rolling Stones and Jimi Hendrix, the Beatles, they all recorded there.
But you mentioned Ireland. Are you going to be playing in Ireland as well?
Or? They're playing in Ireland, and I'm going to be playing in Austria, of all places.
And when you're in Austria, which genre of music are you playing there?
It's going to be with some European musicians, and they're all really into the ukulele. So Fred Lunt and I, he's another steel player. He plays with Taj. Fred and I are going to go over there and put our input in, and it's going to be a 9-piece band called the Bonsai Garden Orchestra. It's going to be interesting to see what we come up with between European musicians and us coming from Hawaii. We'll bring our steel guitars and see what we come up with. got to go to Portugal and play some festivals down there. It's with Terry and the Tahitians. So he had his Tahitian banjo. I had a koa ukulele. And we met up with some of the Portuguese ute players. They call it the machete. And it has steel strings and it's tuned slack. You know, it was cool. It was not like what you would expect. And so we had a little gig that we threw together and featuring the different styles, the Portuguese players, the Tahitians, and I represented Hawaii. Real fun. Bringing it back to the roots, you know.
Where do you see the future of Hawaiian music?
You know, Hawaiian music is wide open. I mean, it's always been influenced by something. Look at the spectrum of Hawaiian music. You've got all types. Even in the past, in the Lahula Rumba period, you know, jazz, blues, country, all the way up till now with the Jawaian music, the Jamaican influence. I like to take it and turn it 180 and try it another way. So I recorded some Bob Marley tunes in slack key. It's a Jamaican song, but it's played real Hawaiian style. And I did that with a song called Small Axe. It really worked well. So it is wide open. Hawaiian music, it's fun to experiment with it. You want to be honorable. You want to try and make it something that is real and not taking it too far away from what it should be.
Well, you've been influenced by so many of these wonderful musicians in Hawaii. Which of them really influenced you, or who did you have the most fun with?
Well, you know, Gabby Pahinui, of course, very supportive of what I was doing at the time. I think our common denomination there was we both played steel guitar and slack key. Love the instruments. And, you know, Gabby, he was very knowledgeable of music. You know, we could talk about Django Reinhardt or country musicians, jazz musicians. He really had a good knowledge of music. And he liked all kinds of music and played different types of music, jazz and things. But he was just such a great influence, and he was really one of the standard bearers of the time in the 70s, getting Hawaiian music out there and being part of that whole flourishing of not just the music, but the culture. When you grow up here, you have a different appreciation for the land, the sea, and taking care of it. It's just a shame to see, you know, people come in here and not being into the culture, having a different type of mentality about what can I get from Hawaii, you know? Well, I think what can I give to Hawaii? And for me, that would be being a part of the culture and contributing songs and styles and things. Yeah, there were other real important people that came along to give me a lot of really good energy about what I was doing. Jeno Keawe is one of them. Auntie Alice Namakilua. She was one of the few that I actually looked her up, and she was very gracious. She loved apple bananas, I remember. What I learned from Auntie Alice is that Nahe Nahe style, that really old style. That's how they played back then. There wasn't a lot of flash and trick stuff. It was very rootsy, very from the Aina feeling. And I try and do that type of music. I mean, I have fun, you know, playing tricks on the steel, but it's like he has taken it back to the very beginning. There weren't a lot of instruments in the islands, and the guitar was one of the first that got over here.
Slack Key had styles that were unique to the area. Like Niihau style is totally different than somebody playing on Oahu, even though they're playing traditional styles.
Oh yeah, the tunings were sort of kept secret even, you know, back in the old days. It was watching Ata Isaacs and Gabby and all those guys play. What you did was listened and watched and stayed out of the way and let them play and absorb. That's what we did. And then when you get home... What was that tuning you did? Drop that down. Try and figure it out. And then you end up trying your own tunings out, which I've done a lot. I'll do tunings, I'll use them one time, record with it, and then forget about it. But it's fun to experiment, it really is. And that's what keeps it interesting and keeps it moving in a direction, I guess. I like what's happening in Hawaiian music. There's such a variety. Slack Key's kind of been dominant in a lot of ways because I think it's... really got that sort of rootsy feel to it. Sounds very traditional. But I like singing and I like writing in Hawaiian. I've been studying the language for about 35 years. I think we got lucky when we wrote Kai Hanupanupa. It all came out correct. And at that time, I didn't have the knowledge I have now, so I think we were lucky. Actually, the Casimeros recorded that song. You ever hear their version? It's beautiful. real nahi-nahi style.
Well, it's interesting today, composers quite often write in English and then have someone translate it because they can't quite pull it off. And the fact that you would take a shot at writing it in Hawaiian, pull it off, that says something. Are you going to keep doing that?
Yeah, well, you want to have it proofed, you know. It's kind of risky doing that, actually. It is a lifelong study, really, of the language. I just wish that more people that decide to move to these islands absorb the culture and not just live like they would in Peoria or
Malibu,
York, you know. Yeah, Hollywood. And, you know, contribute. I think that's my purpose. Contribute to the culture. Leave something behind that somebody might really enjoy or even influence them, if they're musicians. I can't imagine a better gift. That's how I feel about Saul K. Bright and Gabby and all of them. You know, they sort of passed this gift along to us. We're very lucky. We'll do the same thing.
Your idea of leave something behind, don't lose touch with the tradition, that's a healthy viewpoint.
There were good programs for a while back in the 80s. I did this thing called Artists in the School. And they sent me, first of all, they sent me to some hospitals and some schools. So I played for kids and for old folks. And then they asked if I wanted to play in any prisons or jails. And I jumped at that chance. I said, absolutely. And I can proudly say I've been in every jail in the islands. Not as an inmate, though, as a performer. But they really appreciated it. I also got to go to Kalaupapa when there were still many residents there. That was a real high point. I remember they had a little community center. I played there. And as I was packing up, I heard this elderly woman. She said, oh, it's too bad. The ones up in the dispensary couldn't hear you play. And I said, where is it? We went right up there and played for some old Hawaiians that really had this terrible disease, leprosy, so long. And sitting there in wheelchairs. And I remember played Sassy Hula, and this one lady named Rachel, she got so lively and started clapping her hands along with the song. And it was just an incredible moment. Yeah, these islands are really unique. I don't think that the culture is in danger as it was. I think that the Aina, the sea, how are we going to protect them, you know? It's a real challenge now. You know, it's kind of up to us.
Context of Hawaiian culture, what does aloha mean to you?
Oh, many things. One thing it means to me is respect, as much as love or caring or Malama, you know, respect, honoring, appreciating. It means a lot of things, but respect comes to mind because like any indigenous peoples, the Hawaiians have had to really put up with a lot of terrible times and loss. And yet the culture and that aloha is always going to be there. Aloha also means giving. And that's what I try to do is give back to the culture. I can't imagine being here and, you know, being a taker. What's that?
Based on that, that would be what would motivate you to play for prisons, play for schools, go to Kalaupapa, and things of that nature, because that's giving back.
Yeah. And, you know, try to influence people that are new here, that don't really get it. What I try to do is try and turn on these people that come here. They want to live here, but they bring their ways. They got to learn aloha. I just think that if you can't give back, then why even be here? I had a partner in my life. Her family was from the Sioux Reservation, and I spent a lot of time with Native Americans. I also like that music. But, you know, the indigenous people, they have a way of thinking that a lot of these modern people don't have, and that's respecting your land and your air and your water and your surroundings, making sure that things stay alive and don't get spoiled, you know. And I know people need to work and there's industry and all that, but, you know, how do you balance that? It's a hard one.
About giving back and perpetuating the culture you've talked about, taking music like Salhobi or the old approaches to steel guitar and kihoalo and re-recording it in today's world, not so much as a statement, but as a saying, don't forget, this is what's really, this is where the beginning was.
Yeah, it's part of the heritage. That's why we record these things. That's why there's the Merry Monarch Festival. Yeah, perpetuate the culture, honor the past, and pass the torch on if it comes to you. Do what you can and keep it alive. They have this Kahili Award they gave me. That was quite an honor. And their phrase is, keep it Hawaiian. That works for me.
KKCR would like to thank Ken Emerson for sharing with us on this edition of Talk Story. Talk Story was recorded at Fat Tuesday Records, Treble in Paradise, and the studios of KKCR. Funding for Talk Story was made possible by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Talk Story is produced by Larry Lasota, engineered and mastered by Ron Pendragon. Ken Emerson was interviewed by KKCR Hawaiian music programmer Noel Brooks. For more information about Talk Story or Kauai Community Radio, log on to www.kkcr.org or call us at 808-826-7774. Ahuiho, till we meet again.